Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to Not Another Mummy Podcast with me, Alison Perry.
I'm joined today by current Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan. Sadiq has been mayor since 2016 and was previously a Labour MP for Tooting in South London. A dad of two, his daughters are now in their 20s, so I'm hoping he will have some parenting wisdom he can share with us today. Sadiq, welcome to the podcast.
Well, it's great to be on a mummy. Can I just say, Alison, it gets easier.
That's what I want to hear. Basically, that's it. Job done. You can go now. How are you doing today, though? Because I'm guessing you're pretty busy in the run-up to the mayoral election next month.
It is, yeah. Look, I love campaigning. I really do. But I've also got a full-time job being the mayor. So it's juggling, you know, the responsibilities of being the mayor, whether it's policing or transport, fire service. We've managed to avert a strike. But also campaigning, getting out and about in London, speaking to and listening to Londoners, setting out my vision, should I have the privilege of being re-elected mayor. But I love it. I can't complain. It's the best job in the world.
Brilliant. And I mentioned there that you're a dad of two. What does being a good dad mean to you?
Well, one of the things somebody advised me early doors, I mean, my daughters are now 22 and 24, was, you know, don't try and be the perfect parent. Just be as good as you can be. And that's really important advice, Alison, because when my wife and I had our kids, you know, we were, you know, my wife was 29, I was just 30, our first daughter, then, you know, 18 months later, we had our second daughter. And because we were both professionals, there was this fear that we try and be perfect parents. We were both very good lawyers and doing very well. And that advice is really important. And I've always recognised I'm not the perfect dad, a million miles away from being the perfect dad. But do the best I can, not feel guilty about things. But I've always tried to be present, which is really important as well. And you will know, Alison, all of us are busy. And I think, yes, quantity is important, but also quality of time is important. You know, if you're spending a lot of time with your kids, but always on your phone, always on a tablet, you know, always looking at social media, what's the quality in relation to the time you're spending with your children? And so I try and, you know, spend a decent amount of time with the children, even now, but also make sure it's quality time.
So what kind of things then, when your kids were younger, what kind of things would you do with them in that quality time? Did you, you know, very much carve out individual different time with each of your daughters?
Absolutely. So my daughters are 20 months, 18, 20 months apart. One's born in June, one's born in September. So, you know, take or leave 2 years between them. And so lots of things we do together. They very early became good friends, which is a real bonus. If you think one is hard, having two is like a different kettle of fish. And before they were five, I mean, sleep was a problem. My eldest, even now, is not a great sleeper. And sleep deprivation, you can understand why, is a form of torture.
Yeah.
Our second one was, though, brilliant. She would just sleep straight away, no problems at all. So it's different things for different daughters. With Anissa, my oldest, I just literally, and I, looking back on it, I smile. I'd take her out in the car seat and I'd drive around to put her to sleep. And then bring her back home and take her upstairs. The second one, Amari, just put her in her cot and she was gone. And similarly, when Anissa first began nursery, my eldest, I'm still traumatised to this day where when I dropped her off, she held onto my leg and my entire 30 metres walk from dropping her off to the out, she was holding my leg.
Oh.
I went to the car. This is a true story. I went to the car and I started crying.
Oh.
I rang my wife and I said, this is, you know, I can't, this is really bad. She said, no, don't worry. She'll be fine. you know, it's just the first day stuff. She was our firstborn. It happened for 4 days, Alison. And the fifth day, I said, I'm not taking her. You've got to take her, boy. I refuse to take her. Our secondborn, Amara, she ran to the nursery. I mean, she's like, didn't even look back. She was gone. And so the point being is, no two kids are the same. And so your children will have different interests. Even now going on holiday, one of my daughters is an action person. She likes sightseeing. She wants to do stuff. My other daughter wants to just stay by the pool. And so I think you've got to recognise children are different. Don't try and do a one-size-fits-all. So even now, I'll go, you know, shopping with one daughter. I may go to the theatre with another daughter. I may go to a gig with both of them. So it just depends. And you can't try and retrofit what you've read in a book or a manual with your children because every child is different.
That's so true. Now, you grew up in a modest household in Tooting. How do you think that's influenced the way that you've parented your kids?
So when I grew up, I'm one of eight. I've got six brothers and a sister. I'm bang in the middle. So my mum, you know, had eight children. My mum and dad, both incredibly hardworking. We lived in a three-bedroom council property, sharing bedrooms. A number of things I'd say about big families is, of course, my parents were brilliant, but actually you end up raising each other, if that makes sense. So your elder siblings are really important in relation to good influences, in relation to hand-me-down clothes, in relation to, you know, friends they've got becoming your friends. And so I was really lucky because my older three brothers, my older sister, were great role models in relation to work ethic, in relation to, you know, being involved in the community. But also we would spend a lot of time outside the home. When you're a small home, you spend a lot of time outside the home. And we were lucky, you know, our council estate wasn't, you know, the roughest, but it wasn't the nicest. And so neighbours knew each other. And it sounds really strange speaking about this in 2024, bearing in mind how things have evolved. But neighbours kept an eye on other people's kids, if that makes sense. So my mum knew that other people on the estate were keeping an eye on us when we were out and about. Yeah. And also, thankfully, we had youth clubs, we had boxing clubs, we had cricket, we had football. There were things to keep us busy after school, at weekends and during school holidays. And I just think now, bearing in mind the concerns parents, you know, like you and I rightly have about the safety of our kids, my parents were far more relaxed about us being out and about. I'm not saying they were negligent, but just far more relaxed. You know, we could go cycling for hours on end and my parents don't worry. We could, you know, my two brothers and I would go often on day trips on the buses around London. You'd have a red bus Rover for 60p. You'd go all across London. We'd go in the morning, come back at night time. My parents were cool about that. Not just because they trusted us, not just because they were so busy, but it was a different environment in relation to, you know, being aware of some of the issues around safety that we now rightly, you know, are concerned about.
I do wonder what impact that will have on our children. I've got a 13-year-old and we do let her go on public transport to and from school by herself. But we're really, you know, like the other day she said to me, I want to go to the park with my friend, you know, at 6 p.m. And I was like, no, you can't do that. And I do wonder, having grown up, you know, at a time when we could just roam free, what effect will that have on our kids? What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's really hard. Listen, it's really hard. I mean, I often used to tease my wife about her being, you know, a helicopter mum because we'd want to be there to make sure the kids were okay, dropping off, picking up. For a long time, the discussion in my family was sleepovers, right? You know, when are you allowed a sleepover? And so my wife and I, because we're both lawyers, we would say, look, you can go to one parent and ask for permission, but you have a right of appeal. And so if I say no to something, you've got a right of appeal. It's basic human rights stuff, Alison. You know, it's Article 6 of Human Rights Act. But anyway, so they have a right of appeal to mum or vice versa. There were some things, though, where there were no rights of appeal. And sleepovers was one of those. And so they got to a stage where, you know, we trusted our kids. We'd raised them well. And, you know, we'd make sure we did our due diligence. Where they're sleeping over? Have we met the other parents? Who else will be there and stuff? But you do have to start slowly on a sliding scale trusting your kids, whether it's going to the park, having sleepovers, the first party. Oh my God, Alison, I thought I was a cool, modern, metrosexual, chillax dad. The first disco my eldest went to, I was like Victorian dad, you know, dropping off, what are you wearing, who was there, who did you talk to? And it just, it's difficult to explain unless you've been through it. You know, it's like you sort of think you're okay.
Yeah.
I'll give you another example. I was the most chillax dad at primary school with my girls, honestly. I thought I was anyway. And then in year six, it happened in year five, every parent in the playground started talking about entrance exams and school tests and tuition. And it was like, I was like, what are you talking about? You know, they'll go to the nearest secondary school. And you realize actually that often that's not the case, because often schools, even though they may be comprehensive and near you, they've got tests and they've got a system of doing stuff. And so all these things you may think about and you preconceive your idea as a parent, a lot of them, I'm afraid, go out the window. And you've got to be pragmatic and dexterous. Don't be an ideologue when it comes to parents. Just because you weren't allowed to the park until you were 15, or you weren't allowed to go to a club till you were 21, it won't apply to your kids. Things are different. The biggest difference, I'm afraid, is, you know, social media, the phone, right? This thing is a source of brilliance, but also a source of mischief. We had a rule, my wife and I, that neither of our kids would get a mobile phone until the end of year six. We'd got it for the summer holidays, so they get used to it for year seven for secondary school.
Yeah.
Because it's important that text instead of, I've arrived at school, I've arrived at, you know, so-and-so's home, or if I'm at work, I've arrived back home. There's a few rites of passage: getting the front door keys, getting a mobile phone, being able to stay at home by yourself when you're at work. And so, you know, all I'd say is don't get too stressed about it to other parents. You know, you'll find your rhythm, you'll find your groove. And, you know, like I said, do the best you can. Don't be perfect.
Yeah, I think that's a really tough one, though. The whole mobile phone, when's the right time to do it? Social media, it's...
Well, the other thing is you get this, you know, we used to have this when I was growing up. You know, it was called when I was growing up the Mrs. Jones syndrome. Mrs. Jones has got that, so you could have that as well. The syndrome now is so-and-so's got, you know, an iPhone 12. You give me a cheap phone. And I say this, one of the things we were quite strong about is making sure both our kids had the cheapest phone possible, because one of the things you will know is kids can lose things, or it's a temptation for somebody to steal it. And so having that cheap phone, it was just analog at the time, was really important. Once they got used to that, later on they got, you know, obviously a phone they could have social media on. But then you and I both know, how do you control what your kids see?
This is it.
It's really difficult.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So growing up then, you mentioned that, you know, you had quite a few brothers and one sister, is that right?
Yeah, she was the boss though. She still is.
And what was that like, going from quite a male environment to a very female environment with your wife and daughters?
I mean, it's transformative. I mean, genuinely, I mean, there's little things and there's big things. Little things, like, I'm embarrassed to share this with you, but putting the loo seat down. I mean, when you share your home with three women, it's very different from sharing your home with, you know, seven blokes. And so you learn things, you get socialised in relation to becoming more cultured and, you know, having better manners. But also other things, we grew up, we didn't really hug much. You know, not the same, we're all alpha males. You know, when we were growing up, I don't remember saying I love you to my siblings and my parents. I say it all the time to my kids. I say it to my mum now as well, and obviously my wife. we hug all the time. I'm a hugger now. And I think having children made the difference, not necessarily because they're girls. Having children does change you in relation to not just your priorities, but also you don't really understand. The phrase I'd use is unconditional love. You love your children unconditionally. Everybody else you love is almost transactional. Your spouse, your partner, you know. But, you know, people that you, you know, your parents is unconditional. And the same goes with your children. And that changes you in relation to your mannerisms because they're your children. But I think having girls, it, for me, was like transformative in relation to empathy. And so, for example, I don't think I really understood that a girl using public transport is very different to a boy using public transport. I don't really think I understood that the experience of a girl going to a disco is very different to a boy going to a disco. I don't think I understood when a girl does exercise, it's very different to a boy doing exercise or wearing a helmet or being sweaty, playing sports and so forth. And so that was a wake-up call because I've been somebody who enjoyed sports at school, enjoyed banter on public transport, enjoyed going to clubs and so forth. And then you're hearing from people you love the experience they have from being, harassed on public transport, molested. This phenomenon of upskirting I didn't know about, because I don't about people taking photographs up your skirt, the inappropriateness that sometimes at clubs, boys being lecherous, behaving inappropriately, women not feeling safe, and so forth. So, I'm not going to pretend that I've ever been a perfect individual, but having children, having girls, I think it's just opened my eyes to a world that I wasn't aware of. I almost wore blinkers as a boy and as a young man.
And you've done a fair amount to tackle women's safety in London, haven't you? But what, in your view, can still be done to increase that safety?
Well, I'm going to share with you a really scary stat, and your listeners may or may not know this, but across our country, every 3 days, a woman is killed at the hands of a man, every 3 days. That's one end of the spectrum, which is the consequence of boys and men not being challenged early doors. The other end is misogynistic attitudes that begin as a child, as a boy. I think a huge amount we've got to do as a society, government, national policymakers, mayors, councils, the NHS, schools, the police, the criminal justice system, parents, and all of us. So it's got to start early. So it takes a village to raise a child. We know they say that the proverb, but actually in schools, I think we should be teaching boys and girls about healthy relationships. We should be teaching boys about respecting girls. We should be ensuring that girls have the confidence to push back against bad behaviour. We're going to be teaching boys that the pornography they may find on their phones isn't the real world. It isn't the real world. It's not the case that women and girls like to be treated that way. Similarly, at secondary school, it breaks my heart when I'm told about girls stop doing exercise because they're teased by boys. Or, girls having to change the clothes they wear, the length of their skirt, the footwear they wear because of the way they're treated by boys. And then it extends to, whether it's amorphous limb, sexual harassment in the public place, misogyny, to what happens at, in nightclubs, places of work, public transport, the public realm, to the criminal justice system. God forbid, if somebody was to report a rape today, if somebody was caught, and there's a big if, it will take 3 to 4 years before that person reaches trial. Only 2 out of 100 rape allegations does it lead to a conviction. So it's got to be a whole systems approach, but it's got to start with public education. The phrase I use when it comes to, particularly violence against women and girls, is we need a public health approach. What I mean by that, I think violence against women and girls is akin to an infection. How do you deal with an infection? You treat the infection, so get the bad person off the streets. You stop it spreading, but also you stop it occurring in the first place. And that's why there's got to be a whole systems approach. And dads are intrinsic in this role because, we spend time with our children, whether it's boys or girls. But men and boys have to provide allyship to women. This isn't a problem that women and girls can solve by themselves. We've got to be proper allies, because it's still the case in one of the most advanced democracies in the Western world, in one of the most progressive countries in the Western world, women are being killed every 3 days at the hands of a man.
Yeah, it's terrifying. And something else that you have been very passionate about is the free school meals. You've extended the free school meals for all primary school children in London. It's clearly very important to a lot of families, but why is it so important to you?
So I'm somebody who benefited from a means-tested free school meal when I was at primary school and secondary school because my dad is a bus driver and my mum, who raised eight kids but also was a seamstress, didn't earn enough to be able to afford to pay for the school meals or to have, you know, the packed lunches and stuff. So we were eligible for a means-tested free school meals. And it was a huge strain and anxiety taken off my parents' mind. One less thing to worry about, one less expense. I know the difference it made to my family. I remember, though, the stigma being one of those kids on free school meals, having to go to a separate queue, receive my token, eat separately from my mates. So, yes, I'm grateful for receiving a means-tested free school meal, but I still remember the shame and embarrassment from doing so. I recognise in this great city of ours, many people are struggling with the cost of living crisis. Parents are sometimes skipping meals so they can feed their kids. Kids are going to school with a packed lunch that isn't really nourishing as it should be. And we know the children aren't attentive when they're hungry. They're not eating nutritional meals outside the school. So, you know, last year I was really proud. We made history for the first time, you know, in our city's history. Every child that goes to a state primary school receives a free school meal. We've calculated almost 300,000 children benefit from this policy. The good news, speaking to teachers and parents, is it's been transformative. Children are more attentive, they're more productive in the classroom, they're doing better at school. Schools and parents have less friction because they're not chasing up school dinners. Parents are saving, over the course of 2 years, for every child about £1,000, really important during this cost of living crisis. And so what I've done is I've extended it now for another year. And so children will carry on receiving nutritious free school meals if they live in London.
Yeah, it's great. And what's your view on the quality of the school meals? Because recently we've had a head teacher and some parents comment on what's being served up by the private companies that are being brought in to do the school meals.
Really important point you raised. So I did a lot of work with, you know, a lot of people in relation to this issue, from Jamie Oliver to Henry Dimbleby and many others, to make sure we were having our children eating nutritious meals. So a few things we've done to make sure we address this issue. Firstly, just not sure if you're aware, but in London, 4 out of 10 children aged 10 are obese or overweight. And that's because often they're eating the wrong source of food, because it's cheaper, frankly speaking, to buy 6 pieces of chicken and chips than to, you know, buy a nutritious meal. And many parts of our city haven't got shops that sell fresh fruit, fresh produce. Often the only food you can get is processed stuff. So what we've done is we're paying more money to schools under our free school meals initiative than was being paid by the government previously. So going into details, every school will receive £3 per meal, which is a lot more than the government gives them. The government was giving them £2.45 per meal. So that means we can be rest assured that the meal is good quality, but also the school is required, when it gives the contract to the caterer, to make sure the meal is nutritious and healthy for the child. There's no point just feeding kids if it's not been horrible, processed horrible stuff that's bad for the children. And we're also making sure a lot of our schools are becoming water-only schools, so the children aren't, you know, drinking fizzy drinks or having stuff that, you know, means that they can't focus in the classroom, but also aren't leading healthy lives. And at the same time, we're wrapping around that with improving the quality of air in and around our schools as well, rolling out air quality filters so inside the classroom children are breathing cleaner as well. It's really important to think about the welfare of our kids, because what you eat when you're a child, what you breathe when you're a child, affects the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's so important. Final question, Sadiq, for you. Going back to parenting, is there anything that you would like to go back and tell Sadiq of 24 years ago, something that might make your own parenting journey a bit easier?
It'll get easy. I mean, like I said, it gets different set of challenges, but it gets easy. I mean, one thing that I reflect on is, you know, could I have spent more time with the children? I was a hard-working workaholic lawyer, then I was a hard-working workaholic member of parliament, and now I'm a hard-working workaholic mayor. But recently, you know, my friends organised a surprise birthday party for me, and my daughters did a surprise speech. And the stories they told about me always being there for school plays, me always being there for their, you know, gym recitals, me taking them swimming every Friday religiously, me dropping them off at school when they're at primary school, which is the routine that my wife and I shared upon and agreed upon, it made me quite emotional because I realised actually I did spend a lot of time with the children and it was good quality time. So don't be too self-critical, I say, to those parents listening to you, because we're our worst critics, right? We are so critical. Most of the time, our kids haven't noticed, you know, and what they notice is the good stuff. So, you know, be upbeat and optimistic and be a glass half full person. You know, I'm sure all of us every day regret things about how we're raising our kids, how we spoke to our children, how we rushed, you know, when we should have been more chillax with them, how we scolded them when we probably shouldn't have scolded them, and so forth. Don't be too self-critical. And enjoy the experience. Don't just enjoy the memories, enjoy the experience as well. Live in the present.
Love that. Sadiq, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been so great to chat to you.
A pleasure.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.